welcome to Night Clerk Radio. This is episode 18, the Quake 1 soundtrack. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Burke. How you doing, Burke?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing, Russ?
I'm doing quite good. I love this album. Probably one of the major pieces of music that led me down the dark ambient journey that I am on right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to this album many times over the years and started seeking out music like it. And here we are today. Yeah, this is the soundtrack for the Quake 1 game back in the days of DOS and Windows 95. This was composed by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails fame. Of course, I was first exposed to it when Quake 1 was released, playing the game as a young lad. Yeah, I assume, did you play this as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. This game blew my mind when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like 13. Moving into my angsty teen years. And I loved Doom and everything, so I just bought it because it was id Software. Man, that, like, I think that might have been like some of my first exposure to Lovecraftian gothic type stuff.
Oh yeah,
maybe outside of like some horror movies for kids and stuff, but Awesome, man, those 3D graphics. You can walk around an enemy and see the back of the enemy. The sprite didn't just turn to face you.
Mm-hmm.
God damn. But I did not appreciate the soundtrack as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Not until I was older. And I think you've probably listened to it more than I have. Like, I just sort of rediscovered it a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of course, for Quake 1, I did love the aesthetic and the Lovecraftian stuff. But of course, for me, and I think for most people, the legacy of Quake 1 is the gameplay. It's like, for an important video game and like popular video game, it was kind of a sleeper hit at the time. It wasn't like number one on the charts. It wasn't a mega hit like Doom. There's no memorable characters in it. People aren't clamoring for a Quake 1 remake or anything. Like, people don't need to see Quake Guy fight Hell Knights and ogres. I mean, the gameplay, like, it introduced the world to rocket jumping and, of course, deathmatch, which had existed in Doom, but like, Quake brought it to the next level, ushered in the era of internet gaming, online gaming. And of course, Quake 1 is important technologically in video games because mods started becoming a huge thing. Team Fortress, but also Machinima, which is the art of using video game engines to animate. And the first Machinima will use the Quake 1 engine. And I remember those because you had to download them and run them in Quake. Like, they didn't export video because video was too bandwidth intensive, but you could download a mod pack with a Machinima and watch it in Quake. There's one I remember, Blobalicious, that at the time was hilarious and just amazing. You could do this. Wow. It was revolutionary.
Quake also, if I can add to that list, I think was one of the big first speedrun games too. Like, if we're just talking about generic gaming and internet culture.
Oh yeah.
I think, you know, because Quake Done Quick was one of the first big speedrun series in the late 90s.
Oh gosh, you're right. That is true. Yeah, I totally forgot about Quake Done Quick. But yeah, that people were really, it was just a way to show off and really nail those rocket jumps and stuff like that. I guess that must have been one of the foundations for speedrunning.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. I think Quake on a sort of more cultural level was sort of like the end, was probably like one of the high water marks of like the end of this era of the late 90s, was sort of the last time periods in which a AAA game, a major video game, could be released by like one office of like 20 people. And it was sort of the age of the rock star video game developer.
I was going to say, it's easy when one of your 20 people, not to go too hero worshipy, is like Carmack, who just can code a computer to do literally anything he wants.
Yeah, but it wasn't just John Carmack, but it was
I know.
John Romero and American McGee. And like, it was just a bunch of dudes in Texas in one office making Doom, and Doom, you know, got so popular, had congressional hearings because it was so violent. Then we get Quake, which, because if you read up on Quake's development, it was extremely muddled. Like, originally it was going to be like, you were going to be Thor. Like, they kept changing the aesthetic for it and stuff like that throughout the development, that which is why the story and everything else didn't really make sense, or is very, very minimalist, because they didn't care about that. It was all about the technology and the gameplay. And it's also why I think Quake is so idiosyncratic. Like, the whole genesis behind the album, too, there's actually a little essay where Trent Reznor talked about the creation of the soundtrack. And basically, what it boils down to was that id Software, you know, the creators of Doom and Quake, were fans of industrial music and Nine Inch Nails and would blast it while they're coding. And then, of course, Trent Reznor is a fan of Doom. They reached out to each other. I think Trent Reznor gave them free tickets, backstage passes. They got to start to talking, and one thing led to another. And, you know, they're rockstar video game developers. It only makes sense that they collaborate with an actual rock star.
Yeah, they like accidentally courted each other because mm-hmm. he was like, like you said, a huge fan of Doom. And like, you want some VIP passes to my Nine Inch Nails show? And also let me work on your game. Like, it was interesting.
Yeah. One interesting tidbit I found out from this was that due to legal reasons, they couldn't use vocals in this album, which is why it's entirely instrumental. Which, thank God it was, because I don't know if I would appreciate the album as much if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Although there are technically vocals in one of the tracks, Hall of Souls, but we'll get into that in a bit. But this is also important for Trent Reznor because this was his first soundtrack of any kind. And of course, since then, he's done many soundtracks, including, of course, The Social Network, which won Oscar for best soundtrack, or best movie score, whatever.
Score is, yeah. I think, that's the fancy cinema term. It's a score.
Yeah. And of course, he did other instrumentals or ambient albums like the Ghost series, which I also enjoyed. If you remember that, Ghost was also the one you could download for free on the internet. I don't know if you still can or not. And they had an alternate reality game embedded in it. Oh, yeah. Did you not see that?
I don't remember that. I remember an album came out earlier this year that was like Ghosts 4 and 5 or 5 and 6.
Yeah, yeah. But there, yeah, Ghost. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole series of Ghost albums. And the first ones... 1 through 4, 2008, as a 4-part album. So good spoopy music, good ambient stuff. But it's just, you don't really see that as much, at least in AAA games now, this sort of idiosyncratic thing of like edgy, nerdy guys who have a lot of money and influence and they're quote unquote rock stars. And so like, we'll just put a video game with all the shit we like and demons and blood and violence and Nine Inch Nails. Fuck yeah. You know, they're not doing marketing or focus groups. They're not thinking about like engineering the game to be as profitable as possible.
Or, you know, they probably weren't thinking about the Quake franchise and what's the Quake brand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are we going to do with this Quake IP now that we have it? I mean, they made a bunch of sequels, which I'm glad because I loved Quake 3, but just a different approach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, we need to make our characters likable and like we need to have side characters and, you know, bosses and stuff like that. Like, yeah. They just like, yeah, no, let's make a fucking video game. We'll sell shitload. I don't give a shit. Quake 2 like has nothing to do with Quake 1. Like they've never touched Quake 1 setting again. They're just like, yeah, no, that was a mistake. But it wasn't. Like Quake 1 is so weird and unique, but like it's still really fun because it's this weird like science fiction Stargate. But also there's fucked up Lovecraftian demons and shit and medieval stuff with the soundtrack. It's extremely creepy and weird. It's very grungy. It's very industrial compared to a lot of video games in the 90s. It's very sort of minimalist in a lot of ways. Like, you know, it's obviously very, very muted color palettes and sounds. Like consoles dominated video games in the 90s. Like PC games exist, but like it wasn't really, I think, until Half-Life 1, which was 2 years later, that we start seeing like the AAA FPS, you know, that's basically ripping off movies or trying to structure it like you're playing through a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause other games of the time I think of are like obvious Mario. And, you know, Nintendo IPs or Sega IPs, bright or funky or like a little weird, but not this type of weird. Toe Jam and Earl is a very different weird than Quake.
Yeah, it's a very streamlined game experience. Like you're just going through this level, you're trying to get the exit and that's it. And like there's secrets. The levels are extremely weird and large. I do like Quake. And again, now this would be considered an art game. It would be like an indie game. It would be on itch.io. There actually is a minor sort of Quake 1 revival. The video game Dusk is very much aping that style. Have you seen that?
No, but I've heard of it. Played it.
Dusk, though, it's also like Quake 1 and Blood sort of mixed. Mm. So Quake 1 engine, but like more of a Blood mythology to it. That's sort of a niche thing. So, yeah, I quite enjoy Quake. And also the main thing, one of the innovations of this game was that they figured out how to put the music on the CD itself. So like whenever you were playing the game, it was pure audio CD. It wasn't like sampled stuff. It wasn't like heavily compressed. Back then, sound was really large. Like it was, oh my God, 10 megabytes for a single song. that's so much space. But they could fit the whole thing on the CD and then just have the game data as well. Trent Reznor could make use of every bit of crunchiness and weird texture for the album.
And then you could also, like you said, or maybe didn't, pop it in other just a CD player. If you skip the first track, which is just the game data, you can just play the audio. So you could pop it in my little Discman and listen to it on the way to school.
Yeah, you could also rip it too if you were technologically advanced enough to know how to rip CDs.
In 1996, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
So Quake One, the soundtrack was never given an official release. So people just had to rip it and then listen to it or just play through the game. Or, of course, years later, people uploaded it to YouTube and stuff like that. 2 years ago, they announced a vinyl re-release of the soundtrack. And so now it has an official release, which I think is coming out this year. It still hasn't shipped yet, but it should be shipping soon. It's like a $40 vinyl. If I had a record player, I would get it. But that's a, you know, $40 for the album, then however much for a record player. That's a lot to listen to just one album. So
another interesting thing about the soundtrack and the mid to late 90s in general is other soundtracks are also really maturing. So I think it's interesting. This is the same year as the Resident Evil soundtrack, mm-hmm. which we talked about with Bridget, which is also like an awesome, moody, dark, ambient soundtrack. So I think the 90s are interesting in that, in addition to being able to put the music on the CD so you can have massive, in air quote, files, that technology was just really maturing in a way across a lot of video games, which I thought was sort of interesting.
Well, one thing in general is I think this sort of marks an era where it's interesting. Like, a lot of people think that, you know, video games, as we've talked before, video game soundtracks are like movie soundtracks, but there are structural differences in a video game, because in a video game, the composer doesn't necessarily know exactly what the player is going to be doing when they listen to this music. It's not a linear thing like a movie. It's like, well, 10 minutes in, this frame of film is going to be shown and, you know, it's going to be this scene. So it has to be more generalized. Quake is a very, if you've never seen it played or if you've never played it yourself, it's a very fast-paced action game. Like, it is frenetic. It is twitch-based. Like, you have to be fast and accurate and be able to dodge and move quickly in order to survive as these monsters are coming at you, trying to kill you. But the music is this, mostly this ambient, you know, like the typical thing in a video game would be have energetic, fast-paced music that like matches the intensity of the action. But this is going the opposite route, because also in Quake there are a lot of times you're wandering. It's like every level, especially the later ones, are mazes, and you're trying to figure out how to unlock certain doors by finding switches or keys. And there's a lot of downtime, and the sort of brilliance of the soundtrack is like during the action scenes, the explosions and the roar of the monsters, the sound effects are going to overwhelm the music. You're not going to be able to really hear it. But when the action stops, you know, when the monsters are all dead, this sinister music starts creeping in and sort of ramping up the paranoia for the player of like what's going to be around the next corner. And I think that's a really smart choice, and that's one of the reasons I like this, is because as you're walking around, it's like you're backtracking through levels. You'd be like, where the fuck is that switch? You're still immersed in this music makes you feel like you're in this otherworldly environment trying to kill the monsters and survive.
Yeah, that's true, because if they had gone the Doom route of just having the music be MIDI covers of 80s metal, it gets a little weird when you start backtracking, because you're like, oh god damn it, where's the yellow key? I don't remember. So you're like wandering through this corridor while like tinny Metallica is playing or something. It's just like not the same experience as like you said, getting lost in Quake and having some haunted Trent Reznor samples in your ear as you try to figure out where you're going.
Like, yeah, screaming, a lot of it is whispering, which is, I think, more sinister.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he does that thing, like, because he does this on, oh man, we're getting to the music, sorry. we can talk about it more specifically, but some tracks, he does that screaming, and it's like, he's also done that on just Nine Inch Nails albums from kind of the same period, where he's like screaming, but the level's brought way down and it's kind of like stretched out. So it's like this haunted, distant screaming, not like literally screaming in your ears. It's like this, like this breathy scream in the distance.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, it's really good. you start up the soundtrack, that is the beginning. It fucking rules. And it's kind of like, and we just mentioned how it was ambient, dark, and not low key. And then it's like this track, which is not that. It is very much fuck you, I'm going to kill everything in my path kind of music. But that still works, especially as the opening music. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that scuzzy kind of guitar opening. I mean, that's very much a Nine Inch Nails thing, I feel like, just in general. I mean, this is also very much a Nine Inch Nails album. They have a kind of sound that you can kind of peg them pretty early on, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Then, of course, there are these industrial sounds. And by industrial, I mean literally industrial. Mm-hmm. The sounds of machines, which is a reoccurring motif on this album. I wish we had more detailed like notes of like what Trent did to create this album, what kind of sounds he sampled. But I quite like the Quake theme. That's what this track is called. It is the Quake theme.
Yeah, we have actual track names now, which I guess is kind of an interesting little historical thing about this album. When the tracks were just buried on the CD, no one knew what they were called. I think it's really appropriate as a theme, not just because it's catchy and it hits you right as you open the menu and you hear that awesome grimy guitar. But it really establishes a lot of motifs that appear throughout the album. The rhythmic aspect of the guitar, that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, yeah, like that sort of effect, you hear that a lot. So like in the next song, Aftermath, you hear it again, but just a single note on a synth. It's just dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. So that sort of repeats. And then, like you said, all this machinery, this like literal industrial stuff, which then mixes with throughout the tracks like organic sounds. Like there's this weird push-pull of things that feel organic and things that feel mechanic.
This is also where the screams are coming in too, like the you hear those process screams. This track does remind me a bit of the Downward Spiral. So
yes,
I think because of that, it's a very good track. Yeah, and again, this is the one people would associate with Quake, because like when you start the game, this is the music playing. So
the layering of textures you get through the song in this album, it's so good. Like every song, even the ones that are long, because there are a couple songs that are 8-ish minutes, I think, they end up just having so much going on. So you mentioned Hall of Souls, which is, I think, kind of the first really long track. It's like 8 and change. I feel like maybe I'm forgetting part of it, but what's interesting is that there's not a lot of rhythmic structure. There's a little bit. There's just this repeated pulse, which is what I think of as like organic, because I think of repetition as feeling organic. But it builds and it builds and it builds and it builds tension. But there's like no release. It feels like going insane. like there's more and more scratching synths. There's more and more of these whispering voices, or those, we'll call them downward spiral screams. I don't know what else to say. And it's like this growing and growing unsettledness, but it never like resolves into something else. You know, we talk about in Dark Ambient, there's like this push and pull between tension and release. And this is just all tension. There's like no push and pull.
That's a really good way of putting it. I mean, like, yeah, the sort of pulsing bass line, it's like a heartbeat. And it's very explicit in some of the later tracks. But like, yeah, I didn't really thought about that. Like there's this buildup, but no catharsis. There's no release. It's just, all right, moving on. Which again, like in this video game, you never really have that. Like, you know, there is a in bad guy that you kill, but like they're kind of like, yeah, all right, I guess we have to have that. So,
and I think that's not just per song, but also the whole album, because not to get too ahead in the discussion, you know, we'll work through the album, but this building of tension is across the whole album. There's no song that's like, here's a break song. So we talked about in the Bridget episode, you know, the save game. Music of like, here's a nice, peaceful, relaxing thing because you're in this safe space, and here's a typewriter ribbon, save your progress. Quake has like none of that, and the soundtrack has none of that. And when I got to the end, there's not even like a heroic like, oh, you won, here's some either like reprise of the theme song into
there's no some victory sort of
outro music.
It's just
this grinding organic biomechanical synth tension texture like all the way to the end for the whole hour. It's just, yeah, it's relentless.
Yeah, because even the ending of the game, if you watch on YouTube, it's just like, all right, we'll blow up the boss in a bunch of blood and gore. That's cool. Here's some text. All right, you're done. For it, actually, very in tune. They've never done endings well.
Oh, but, totally.
Like, yeah. Doom is also just text on a screen. Like, yeah, all right. I guess, whatever. We ran out of time to make cool shit. We're burned out on this. Moving on. The next track is Intermission, or not, it's Aftermath, which is used as an intermission It's what plays when you find the exit at the end of a level, apparently. So
that makes sense because it's one of the shorter tracks. It's only a few minutes.
Yeah.
So it's not really something they expect to play while you're working through a level. You're just reading your stats at the end of the level, like you killed 80% of the monsters.
Yeah, that's the closest they get to like a save game music. And it's still still kind of sinister. Like it's a lot of ambient kind of synth sounds to it. There's some guitar. It's definitely probably the most, I don't know, one of the last track's actually pretty chill too, kind of. Well, by the standards of this album. Are there any things in particular you like about this track?
I think I sort of mentioned earlier, I like bringing back the rhythmic motif of the Quake theme, but minimal, bringing it from a chord down to a single note. And then this one really had a lot of the growing textures I like in the synths, a lot of stuff that sounds windy to me, like an ominous wind. I think that sort of stuff
I
really like.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I think that even sort of connects to the game itself because you're going through these, I think they're called slip gates. So you're traveling between dimensions or something like that. But when you travel to a new level. So thematically, that kind of makes sense. The next track is one of my favorite tracks on the album, actually. We mentioned a little bit ago, but it's the Hall of Souls. And this is a long one, almost 8.5 minutes long. I just love this sort of, you know, the Trent Reznor ASMR backwards voice talking, whispering into you. It's very spoopy.
Have people gone and broken down what they're saying or anything? Is it gibberish?
I actually looked for that last night on. I was tempted to try it myself to try and like reverse it and see if I could do anything. I did find somebody on a subreddit like, oh, I did it. Here's the link to my SoundCloud. But the SoundCloud was missing. Like the page no longer there. So
tell me what you saw.
Yeah, it was too much. It was too much. Yeah, it's like a Lovecraftian narrator. I've learned the secrets of blah. But the effect is really nice. In fact, why don't we play a sample of it? Voices are very prominent. This is what I remember. I don't know. Is there anything else for you?
No, I think I got a little bit ahead of myself earlier talking about what I like about this track, which is being the first to really, really over a long period of time, just build this constant tension. I'll say the same stuff I said about others. Textures are awesome. The chorusy, grimy synth. And like you said, the whispering and the screaming, it all works.
The next track is unfortunately titled, but it was the 90s. It is Raped. And this is I mean, it's fine. It's sort of these loops that kind of fade in and out. And
yeah, so this is one track that the only thing I really want to say about it, and I don't really have much else to add, is that I do think that there's a strong pulsing effect that reminds me a lot of Breathing. I thought, because there's this deep almost inhale and then like a pause and then a mechanical exhale, and it's a very like soulless monstrous breathing, but it still feels like that, set against all the other noisy loops and stuff going on, is still pretty effective.
The breathing / heartbeat kind of pulse is very strong in this album, and it, like, you're almost entering in the belly of the beast. Like you're entering into like the entire level itself is a monster. The next track, I quite enjoy that, Parallel Dimensions. By the way, so from the rest of these tracks are just associated with different levels in the game, and like there's way more levels than tracks, so they kind of repeat them. So we're not gonna like mention what goes to what level. I like this one. I like the sort of, there's this kind of warblingness to the, like the synth lines, which gives it kind of like this dissonant feeling to it. You know, like things are breaking down, things are chaotic. It's also, this is one of the longer tracks. It's like 7 minutes long, over 7 minutes long. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also like this fan sound in it, like a rotating fan or something. Yeah.
And this track also has, I think, some of the most prominent, just like synth bass, or maybe it's like a heavily processed bass guitar, but there's just like this deep echoing
pulsing base that's kind of underneath everything else that's building on top of it. It's really, really effective. I don't know. Like, it's, all these tracks are pretty effective at what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the next track is the most like heartbeat one, like if you want to. And it's called Life. It's a longer track as well. And there's this heavy pulsing like heartbeat. We're getting the ambient sort of drone almost. Yeah, I don't know if I call it drone or not, but this is heavily ambient. So it's very much like about the texture and the soundscape that's being created. And it feels like you're literally inside a monster at this point.
Yeah, I think I wrote that a couple of times. Like I would almost want to replay the game because it's been so long.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm aware of the soundtrack a little bit more and see where some of the stuff fits in, because this one, between the heartbeat, the like breathing winds, this is where I think all of those organic themes come back around and all pile together into one track. So where that shows up in the game, what you're fighting at the time, which like set of levels you're on, I think is really interesting. After these discussions, I always love to consume the media again that it's associated with. Because like I watched Twin Peaks after we did the Twin Peaks, and like you hear all that, and it's like, Oh. So I kind of want to do that again with Quake.
I would be now Quake there. Like we mentioned, there's an end boss, but that's to kill the end boss. It's like it's a gimmick. It's a puzzle, but there's actually a boss before then. There's only two real bosses in the video because first person shooters, especially in the '90s, did not know how to do bosses. But I would be very surprised if this track was not used for that first boss. That would make sense, wouldn't it? Like you can hear the heartbeat of this massive monster that you have to kill. And that would be my guess for this track. But moving on, the next track is Damnation. There's kind of like some bug kind of sounds in it, like insectile, would you say? I don't know. Maybe I was imagining that.
I would have to re-listen with that in my mind. So insectile in like a skittering, glittering kind
of
creepy crawly bugs. Mm-hmm. Like in The Mummy when the scarabs are like clicking against the tile and stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I could see that. That's interesting because I sort of felt that this track, again, which is why I wanted to talk about where it falls in the game. I felt like sometimes this track sort of does away with some of the organic sort of sounds and goes back to just more strictly spooky mechanical stuff. Like it just sounds back to the very literal industrial, like you're resetting a bit.
Yeah, machinery sounds.
I thought a lot of it sounded like really distorted or faint, crackling, like a laboratory almost. And I think the next track really ramped that up for me. But yeah, that just felt very industrial, like back to that instead of being inside of some creature.
Yeah, the next track, Focus, we get the guitar back and deep bass, some high-pitched kind of sounds, pads, synths. Yeah. I don't know. I do like the guitar in it. This is, less organic. Focus, I think, is a good name for it because it's more abstract, more like it's not particularly linked to, like, machinery or definitely not organic.
I actually want to play a sample from this real quick. Little bit was the kind of most striking part to me about Focus, which is this humming and almost like a alien beeping. Like I felt like I was on the bridge of an alien spaceship. That was the phrase that I used to describe that there's just something in that sound effect and that sound design sounded like some weird alien sensor sweep or like beeping. And I just phasing in and out. I don't know why. It just really made me feel like I was on the bridge of an alien spaceship, like I'd been abducted or something. It just has that sort of sound feel to me. for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So that's why I wanted to play it, so people can be like, no, you're dumb. It's just this.
Well, yeah, I mean, Quake does have this sci-fi like under, like mm-hmm. it's a mix of everything these dudes thought was cool at the time, like, which is,
it's a thematic smorgasbord.
Yeah. I'll say it. Yeah. Again, in the era of like endless DLC and microtransactions and focus grouped everything to death, and like, here's our generic protagonist who looks like all the others.
Ranger.
Yeah. Jack
Ranger. Also voiced yeah. by Trent Reznor. I guess yeah. those are his grunts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is called Falling, which I think is sort of appropriate. It's just dominated by this one sort of freaky little synth. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's more one of the more consistent songs. Like, ambient music is about the texture. It's about the soundscape. It's the, you know, you're not listening to this because you want normal music. You want this to put yourself in a different state of place. So for me, a lot of the Quake soundtracks, the first couple tracks really dominate, because a lot of times, probably because I would get stuck in the earlier levels of the game, I'm guessing that the some of the like, and so I would listen to like Hall of Souls over and over again because I get stuck in levels playing that. But some of these other tracks I didn't hear as much, or maybe they weren't used as many levels.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess Falling was only used in two, according to the Nine Inch Nails wiki, which has a wonderful entry on this. Yeah, so Falling and the track after it, The Reaction, mm-hmm. I'm just bringing up because they felt very similar to me. Like, if they were one long track mm-hmm. pressed together, I would also totally mm-hmm. buy that. They're, to me, I don't know if it's because I was getting towards the end of the album on every listen, but they felt the most drone
mm-hmm.
because they are, I feel like they're much more minimalist than the other tracks. Minimalist is maybe still not the right word, because if you really focus and try to pick out different parts of the production, there's a lot going on. But I think this is the one that all those elements are working together in a different way. They're not purposefully trying to fight each other to create tension. There's just kind of this last 10 mm-hmm. minutes of the album are kind of just this drone-ish effect, which I don't have good words for. But that's just what I remember. Yeah, yeah. I just remember like the last like 8 minutes of this album just really felt like they mellow mm-hmm. out, maybe.
Yeah.
Just some of the more extreme textures
mm-hmm.
fade away.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they use this at the end of the game. I'm not sure though. Yeah, this is what I mean by like when I was talking about how early it gets a little more chill at the end, and or like what is chill by the standards of the Quake 1 soundtrack, and I guess
relatively chill, we'll say.
Yeah, relatively chill. It's drone. Like, it's not like you don't hear the meat sounds anymore, or at least as much, you know, like, you should be grateful for that. Yeah, it's a good way to wind down, I guess. But yeah, I you know, I like this whole album. So
this is definitely something we're checking out. So I think the album is interesting. I sort of thought both as an innovative soundtrack kind of in the history of video game soundtracks, which we talked about earlier, just the way that it really reinforces the atmosphere and the intent of the game. I think the soundtrack also benefits in the context of the game from having the sound design of the game also done by the same person. So there's actually like a real almost blurred line between what is like the sound design and what is the soundtrack. I mean, I guess mm-hmm. not, because there's actual literal audio CD and now vinyl pressing. But yeah. I think in terms of consuming the media of the game, that mm-hmm. all pulls together because it's all the same person mm-hmm. working on it. But also just as a standalone piece of drone or ambient, it's worth checking out. Like, I don't think I'd like chill on my couch and listen to it. But if you wanted to put it on during, I don't know, a game mm-hmm. or
which I actually writing done in the days before RPPR, I've actually used this in games.
Now that that's awesome.
Now that I think about it, I'd just forgotten. Yeah, no, I was like, oh yeah, I did that.
Yeah,
I was running like a Call of Cthulhu game. Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense, because it's an absolute masterclass of mm-hmm. How to sonically induce dread.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. Like, it just feels like someone took a nice album and hit it with a belt sander. That's what I say.
I mean, I don't know. Like, would there be a cryo chamber without this album? Like, would there have been the and by that, I mean, like, cryo chamber obviously has a very pretty, like, supportive fan base. You know, would that fan base exist of listeners if this had not, like, put the seed in countless youngsters like us, you know, at the time, like, ooh, this creepy weird ass music is cool. And then like when you hear it 10 years later, when you hear Cryo Chamber on YouTube or whatever, or Bandcamp, you're like, oh my god, I'm not sure why this awoke something in me. I need to listen to more of this. So Quake 1 is not a dominant cultural thing in video games, but its influence is subtle and insidious. I think the soundtrack is certainly part of it.
And yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
As a random aside, did we even mention that the Nine Inch Nails logo was in the game as like the
it's the, on the ammo boxes for the
nail gun. So
I get it.
Yep. They mentioned that in the little mini essay, which we'll link, talking about how they had to make sure that legally that would work. So it's just this weird side project that Trent Reznor did because he was a fan of a video game, and it turned out to be a really great fucking album. So if you like creepy, weird, ambient music, and if you haven't listened to this, yeah, definitely give it a couple listens. Because
You can just go find it on, honestly, YouTube. There's like a bunch of uploads of it, but there's also the vinyl now. You know, if you want to support the soundtrack.
Yeah, the only way you can buy it digitally, I think right now, is buying Quake 1. But and then just rip it or pull it from the game files. But I don't think anybody is going to care if you download it or stream it on YouTube. Or I don't know if it's on Spotify, but it's definitely a classic of Dark Ambient. I think one of the foundational albums. Thanks for listening. This was a fun dive into nostalgia, but also re-examining. It's always risky to look something that you know that you have fond memories of. Be like, oh, does it hold up? Thank Shub Niggurath that it still does. Thank the dark gods. So in our next episode, we are going to be talking about another influential cultural phenomenon and how it affected music later on. But this time, we're not looking at Dark Army, we're looking at Vaporwave. And the cultural phenomenon is, of course, none other than the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
It affected the music and the aesthetics of Vaporwave quite a bit. I look forward to talking about that because, you know, it's been sampled, it's been reused, it's been everyone knows when you talk about the Weather Channel music, everyone knows what it sounds like. They've kept it up to this day. I mean, the Weather Channel itself, they know.
Oh, yeah. We've mentioned it in passing, but I am stoked.
Yeah. So, of course, we are on Twitter. I am at Ross Payton. Burke is at Burke McBurkinson. And you can also tweet at us at Night Clerk Radio. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever podcasting app you listen to, you use. Also, please tell your friends and family if you like this episode. That's how we grow and how we're able to do this. Hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to start the Patreon and get some more projects going or get some more episodes launched. But, that we'll let you know when that happens. Of course, 2020 has been 2020. So things have been a little chaotic here.
Yes.
I had a blast with this. I'm going to go frag some noobs or something.
Do it.
All right.
Rocket jump to your local record shop and pick up a copy of Quake.
That's awesome. We should just put some cheesy music to that. And we'll talk to you all later. Bye.